do you have any idea what's going to happen in game six? I mean, it seems like every time we think we know something about this Raptors team in the postseason, they flip the script on us. Like, have you learned anything? Here we are. Like, we're deep into the playoffs. They played 2 7-game series. We're in game six of their third round series. I feel like I still don't have a grasp on this Raptors team.
Right, and I think that all starts with the two star players, of course, with DeRozan and Lowry. If you don't know what to expect from those guys, then it's hard to know what's going to come from everybody else. And certainly when they've played well, that's been when the Raptors win. When they don't play well, it becomes much, much tougher. And we just, you know, even at this point, like you say, to be this deep into the playoffs, you know what, 19 games here, you still don't know what to expect from those guys. They've been better at home, so you have to figure that is going to be on their side. You know, Cleveland has not done that well going out on the road in this series, so you've got that going for you. But you know, I just really think that it is still as simple as, you know, what are DeRozan and Lowry going to do?
Isn't that? And I know it sounds like a simple and enough formula. It's easier if it's just one guy you have to shut down, but there's two, and you're right. Like if DeRozan and Lowry don't have a game, Raptors don't have much of a shot here in game six. When you're the Cavaliers, like, you know that. That's no secret to anybody. But how do you go about shutting that down? And now we're in, like, a pretty big sample size of games in this series. We're through five. Three times it hasn't mattered what they've done because they've scored 10 trillion points. But in the two road games for the Cavaliers, those guys have gotten theirs. How do they go about shutting down DeRozan and Lowry?
Well, you know, obviously you'd have to sort of stay off of DeRozan and try to cut off his drives as much as possible. I mean, he's been really good at, you know, when he gets to the rim, drawing contact, and you know, even if he's not making the shot, he's very often drawing fouls. So, you know, you've got to sag off of him. You know, and Lowry, I think you sag off of him as well, and you give him the outside shots until he's proving that he can make those. You saw in Cleveland, the Raptors were, I think they were, what, 3 for 17 from the 3-point line. So you really want to clog up the paint, make them make those 3-point shots. If they start making them, then Cleveland's going to have to adjust. But I think that's going to be the basic defensive philosophy is, okay, you know, you guys are welcome to shoot outside shots, but you're not getting in the paint on us. And, you know, Cleveland has struggled to do that in Toronto, so we'll see how they react or whether they make any adjustments this time around.
Sean, this it on the surface sounds like a simple question, what I'm about to ask you. And I'm going to ask you, how good are the Raptors? Like, where do they rank in the NBA? Because obviously Golden State, the Thunder, I think you'd put the Spurs well above them, the Cavs too, even though, I mean, we're in a game six in this series. I bet you there's a couple more Western Conference teams you'd put ahead of them. But here they are in the Final Four of the NBA playoffs. I understand that, but the Eastern Conference significantly below the West. Like, where do you think the Raptors are in the NBA hierarchy?
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly the teams that you've mentioned, obviously, the Warriors, the Spurs, the Thunder, I think you'd have to have them behind them, probably behind the Clippers as well. Portland, I wouldn't quite say, although Portland, you know, if you want to measure it in terms of what their future is like, you really got to like what Portland has coming down the pike, but they're certainly not better than the Raptors right now. So, you know, I'd probably put them, you know, six or so, and, you know, we'll see what happens with the rest of the East. We'll see if Boston is able to make a deal with that draft pick that they have or something like that. If there's a big free agent that the Heat can lure, you know, we'll have to see what happens in free agency with DeRozan as well, of course. But, you know, at least for right now, I would probably have them number six. Like I say, those four Western Conference teams, and you got the Cavaliers. I'd put the Raptors, you know, right there after that. And really, you know, look, that's a big That's a big improvement over where they've been traditionally, as you know, and it's a lot of credit to the coach, Dwayne Casey, who's came in there and made that into a top-level defensive team, which it was not before he got there. And of course, Masai Ujiri, who's really made some smart, really shrewd pickups in the last couple of years.
I know you put the Raptors ahead of the Blazers right there when you were evaluating where they are in the NBA hierarchy. I guess the voters for NBA, the all-NBA teams kind of disagree with you, at least when it comes to the point guard position, because, and I know Kyle Lowry's had his issues in the postseason. Throughout the course of 82 games, I mean, it's hard to think about a better point guard in the Eastern Conference than the way Kyle Lowry played, but here we are, Dame Lillard, second team All-NBA, and Kyle Lowry, third team. So obviously there's some dissension among the voters as to where Kyle Lowry fits in.
Well, you know, I think you have to look at what Damian Lillard had around him as well. And you know, the way that he had to be a leader on a team that had lost four out of its five starters and basically gave him the keys to the car and for him to still get that team to 44 wins. I think that's the thinking in terms of how that vote went. You know, it's not necessarily a knock against Kyle Lowry. It's more, you know, look, the point guard position right now is pretty well stacked across the league. So, you know, to have a guy like Lillard be second team and to have Kyle be third, I don't think that's necessarily a knock on him or anything like that. I think it just goes to show you just how remarkable it is what Lillard and the Blazers were able to do.
How'd you vote, Sean?
You know, I'd have to double check. I'm pretty sure I had it as it wanted, you know, with Curry and then Lillard and then Lowry third. I think that's how I had it.
All right. Okay. Well, at least you got it out there. Although it obviously was not memorable if you had to think about it. But yeah, I mean, here we are. The Raptors still playing and the Blazers not, but of course running up against.
Well, they also look. I mean, you have to vote on the defensive team. You vote on
right.
Offensive. You vote for all the awards at once. So I don't have it right in front of me exactly how I voted.
All good. Talking to Sean Devaney, NBA writer for the Sporting News. You have a story out about Bismack Biyombo, and it's funny when you see guys on the big stage. There's big money to be made at this stage in the postseason because we're talking about just two series going on right now. So if you're into the NBA, you're watching one of those two. So Bismack Biyombo now maybe becoming a name that people hadn't heard of previous, a guy that's going to be on the open market at the end of this postseason run and talking about maybe $17 million per for him, depending on how old he is. This is the first I've heard of this. Apparently there is some question mark surrounding how exactly old the Raptors big man is.
Yeah, this actually goes back to the draft in 2011 when he was coming out and kind of stormed onto the scene and nobody really knew exactly who he was and there were some GMs who said that they thought he was old as 21 or 22 back when he was, you know, supposedly 18. So there's been some question about that. It really hasn't been something that people have talked about because it hasn't mattered much. But now if you're a team and you're considering, you know, what kind of commitment that you give him, then you do wonder, okay, you know, is this guy 23 or is he 26, 27? Now, having said that, look, you're only going to give him, you know, probably a 3-year deal or a 4-year deal with an option on the fourth or something like that. So it's not like he's going to be out of his prime. I don't think it's something that would necessarily affect the contract that he gets next. But I do think it is something that is in the back of the minds of some of the executives that I spoke to, at least. And you know, going forward is something that people still wonder about.
Let's check out the Western Conference Finals here, Sean. That was a real intriguing game yesterday in Golden State. And as far as like a 9-point loss goes for the Thunder, I was real impressed by them. And I believe like more than ever that they will win Game 6, and we're not headed back to Oakland for Game 7. The Warriors gave them all they could handle, I figured, and barely just pulled that one out in the fourth quarter despite the 9-point bulge. I was really impressed by the Thunder in that loss yesterday.
Yeah, I agree with you. I didn't see much in that loss that made me think that the Thunder are going to go home and roll over, or that the Thunder are afraid of these guys or anything like that. I would have been afraid for Oklahoma City if the Warriors had come in and put one of those 25 point drubbings on them, and that just did not. It seemed like every time the Warriors were in position, you know, where they've got an 11-12 point lead and they're in a position to where they can stretch that out to 15, 17, 18, something like that, the Thunder answered. The Thunder found something to, you know, whether it was Anthony Morrow coming out of nowhere and making some shots or whatever it was, the Thunder came up with some turnovers and things that brought that league back down to 4 or 5 and actually took a lead later in the game. So, I think if you're Oklahoma City, you have to feel okay about it. The Warriors have some things that they can hang their hats on. You know, Andrew Bogut was very, very good, and you have to hope that he carries that over to Game 6. But if I was the Thunder, I'd feel pretty good even in a loss like that.
Yeah, and Steph Curry looked fairly healthy. He had 31 points, 9 of 20 from the field, and 3 of 8 from beyond the arc. So I guess the health narrative is kind of gone with him, but he hasn't really gone berserk in this series yet. And maybe health has been an issue, although, like I said, looked pretty healthy yesterday. I guess that's the one thing this team won 73 games. Maybe it's not the one thing. It's one of the things, though, you look at in the Warriors' favor, that maybe there's still another level offensively Steph can go, although the Thunder have really put the screws to him.
Yeah, there's no question that you know what they've done is they've kept the guy glued to his hip, and that's so often, you know, when you're playing defense and you've got to rotate, you've got to help that you know, eventually somebody's going to get lost in the shuffle, even a star player like Steph Curry. The Thunder have absolutely kept to their principles, and I think there are only two times that I counted in the game yesterday where they lost Steph Curry, where they didn't have a guy on him. Mm-hmm. And if you keep that kind of pressure on him, then it just makes it makes every shot that much more challenging. And he can still make some shots that way, but you're not giving him those open looks where he can really develop some confidence and really just sort of cruise through and start to build up a bit of a run and start to get hot personally. They have not let him do that. They've kept somebody on his hip at all time. I think that's been a real key for why Steph has struggled to this point.
It really does seem like Russell Westbrook, either he hates Steph Curry or he hates the Steph Curry narrative, doesn't it, Sean? Like, it seems, and I know post-game he was asked about, maybe Steph's defense is overrated, and he had a nice little chuckle at that. Like, it's all Steph Curry. And rightly so. He's the two-time MVP. But, like, we're looking at something that's just incredible to watch, and you can't take your eyes off when it comes to Russell Westbrook in this postseason and in this series as well. And it seems like he needs another chip on his shoulder, but, like, here's another one that you're going head-to-head against the guy that's getting all the accolades that you believe belong to you.
Yeah, I think that's right about Russell. I think that's right about Durant as well, and I think they've sort of used that both in the San Antonio series and in this series as well. You certainly with Russell with sort of the personal matchup against Steph here, and even with Kevin Durant in the last round against the Spurs with everybody discussing Kawhi Leonard as a potential MVP candidate and things like that. I think Durant took that personally too. So both of these guys have found some real motivation here in the playoffs. When you get to this level and you get to be at the level that those guys are, sometimes you need that chip, and sometimes that's what drives you, and sometimes that's something that, there's always these stories about Michael Jordan and how he would motivate himself by finding enemies on the other side. You kind of get the sense that that's what Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant are doing here. And certainly, if you're Billy Donovan, you're probably going to just sort of keep feeding them articles that say how great Steph is or how great Kawhi Leonard is, because it certainly worked to this point.
Yeah, it seems like Russell Westbrook enjoys being angry. It seems to work for him so far. Hey, Sean, thanks so much for this. Really appreciate it.
All right, thanks for having me.